Hello, dear listener, and depending on when you're listening, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening. Jim Stroud here with another episode of Tripod. Today, I'm talking with John Riley, who is a Chief Human Resource Officer with over 15 years of responsible and progressive experience in HR management, as well as leadership and operational excellence. His professional experiences include strategic program management, training, employee and organizational development, and corporate purpose and culture. John is passionate about workforce development, and that's something that you definitely will pick up on in our conversation. And that conversation will begin right now on Tripod. You are listening to Tripod, a podcast series of interviews of interest to the HR community. It is hosted by Jim Stroud, sponsored by Proactive Talent, and enjoyed by you. Today's episode begins right after this.
Let's face it, we're in a whole new world now. We know that the reactive old way of hiring and the post and pray model is expensive, and it's getting more expensive every year. What employer brand does is it is a long-term strategy that will help you get better at hiring faster and at a higher quality.
75% of candidates will research a company before even applying, and 86% of candidates will not work for a company that has a bad or non-existent employer brand. Some of the many benefits of having an effective and strong employer brand include doubling the amount of applicants you get per job post, decreasing your cost per hire by 40%, improving employee retention by 60%, and overall just yield better Glassdoor reviews.
We know that companies with stronger employer brands spend about 10% less overall for talent.
Proactive Talent helps out clients with their employer brand by going in and working with them in several phases to learn more about the culture, the people, what are the important values to each and every employee, and then to share that story and refresh the employer brand or build it from the ground up. The benefits of having an effective employer brand is that you're going to be able to attract the talent that you really want to join your company, and not just people who would be simply applying for whatever requisitions you have out there. They generally love your message, love your culture, and are there to be with you for the long haul.
For more information on Proactive Talent, visit them online at proactivetalent.com or click the link in the podcast description. Hello, and depending on when you're listening to this podcast, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening. It's time for another exciting episode of Tribe Pod. I'm your host, Jim Stroud. And with me today is a very special guest. Special guest, tell us, who are you and what do you do?
Yeah, absolutely, Jim. Thank you for having me on the show today. My name's John Riley, and I am a Chief Human Resource Officer in Community Banking. Been in Human Resources for about a little over 13 years now. And mainly my biggest focus is right now, Jim, is on leadership development and just taking this new workforce to the next level. Everybody knows how quickly things are changing, and we all want to be a part of that. And so that's kind of what we're focusing on right now.
I can dig it. You know, I've heard that, heard it said that bad leadership is a curse.
Yes. You know, leadership is a character trait, Jim, that I've heard said, you know, not everybody is a leader. Not every manager is a leader, and not every leader is a manager. And so, you know, you're absolutely right on that.
What is, speaking of that, what do you think is one of the greatest core values an HR leader should possess to be effective, you think?
Yeah, you know, some of the biggest core values, I think, Jim, is probably kindness.
Kindness, really?
Yeah. My mom used to always tell me, Jim, when I was growing up, she said, John, she said, no matter what you do, no matter what you decide you want to do in life, always make sure you do it with kindness. You know, leading with kindness, I believe, is one of the most important character traits that a leader can have. And when I start doing leadership development, especially with managers, with new managers especially, kindness is the very first thing that I touch on. I'm very much a people person. I go around the office, I'm high-fiving, I'm talking to people. Hey, how was your day? How was your kids? You know, and a lot of people mistake kindness for weakness.
Sure.
But being kind is something that takes a lot of self-awareness. It takes a lot of personal confidence. And it's a mindset that ensures that goodness, and you see goodness in others and positivity in challenging situations. And most of all, especially for human resources, kindness requires us to be human. And that's that, to me, if you can start with kindness, then every other leadership characteristic and trait and core value that you need to possess to be successful is going to fall right in place.
Very interesting. Very interesting. It reminds me, I don't know why, but it reminds me of a movie quote where someone said, someone asked the question, is it better to be loved or feared? You know, and as far as being a leader. And the person he was asking was a mobster, so the answer yeah. was to be feared. But your answer, your comment about kindness, though, I think it really resonated to me in that I think someone who is kind is probably a more effective leader, because someone who is kind to you, they will incentivize you to do work for them that you want to do. So they'll do stuff to go above and go above and beyond because they want to do it, because they so are enamored by you, or they so appreciate you. Whereas someone, rather a leader who promotes fear, I think the people do just enough to stay under the radar, to keep away from their wrath. So yeah. I want to applaud your kindness comment.
Yeah, and you are absolutely right on that. Kindness is something that it accelerates trust.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like I said, it starts there. It's like a foundational value, because everything else builds on that. And when you can, when you've got trust within your employees, you've got happier employees. Like you said, you've got employees that want to do, want to perform, and you empower them through that. And it provides better results. It drives everything from there. I told someone just earlier this week, I was able to go to a national human resource conference in New Orleans. And I was telling somebody, you know, what we need more of are chief attitudes officers. We need people to walk around the office and really just set the attitude of the office. And you know what's great about that, Jim, is it doesn't have to be somebody in the C-suite. It doesn't have to be an executive, a VP, an AVP. A chief attitude officer can be the maintenance guy walking around the office. It can be the receptionist, that takes phone calls. Any of those people can fill that position, and it's up to us to empower those people to feel like they have the ability to do that.
Very good. I like that. I like that. I'm getting the idea of a corporate-wide cheerleader.
Yeah, exactly.
Sort of walks around with pom-poms and coffee. you've been in HR game, I think, 13 years, you said?
Yeah, a little over 13 years, yeah.
Wow. I bet you have some war stories. What's the most important advice you received in your career?
This is something that it's resonates with me, and it's I will carry till the day that I'm no longer privileged to be on this earth. My very first job out of college, my supervisor, I was promoted into my very first leadership position, and my manager walked up to me and she pulled me off to the side and she said, "Look, I want to tell you something." She said, "If you want to be successful, this is what you need to do. You need to do three things. You need to lose the ego. You need to stay humble,
okay,
and always be above reproach." And if you can do those three things as a manager, as a leader, if you want to excel in leadership even beyond here, and of course that was, you know, four or five jobs ago. But she said, you know, if you want to go and you want to continue your leadership journey in life, these are the three things that you've got to do. Because no matter what happens, no matter, you know, if you ever, you know, get laid off, if you ever, your reputation is always going to precede you. And as long as you can always do those three things, there will always be a door available for you to walk through. because those three things will precede you. And Jim, that has absolutely stayed true, especially for me. Everybody went through, you know, changes during COVID back in 2020. Sure. And I had a great position for, you know, a huge healthcare network as an HR manager. And of course, I was not the most senior person. And that was at the time when everybody, you know, people, employees were doing layoffs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I got laid off. And it was the first time since I was 16 years old that I had ever been without a job. I've had a job since high school and went from one job to the other, all the way through college, out of college, all the way up to just a few years ago. And when I was looking for a job, I had people telling me, hey, you're not going to have a hard time finding a job because, you know, this is the kind of person you are. And this is the kind of, you know, person that employers are looking for. And it absolutely was true, Jim. And I definitely had a door open for me. And I believe it was because of those things.
I like that. I like that. It reminds me, too, of how people conducted themselves during the pandemic. You really saw what people were made of.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Definitely saw their character. And I know from experience in dealing with so many different people, how you see who people are a lot of times when they're laid off. I've been in that situation several times. And people who can take a layoff gracefully without the attitude or without maybe too emotional, they can maintain their professionalism, they tend to go further because people will remember how well they performed under pressure, and they're more willing to refer them out to other opportunities that come around. The pop culture reference, I'm thinking about the infamous Will Smith slap of Chris Rock at the Academy Awards. And how everyone was talking about how Will Smith embarrassed himself in that situation. But he also talked about how Chris Rock maintained his professionalism.
Yes.
And since that moment, he has gotten more offers. He's doing his comedy tours. He's really blooming and blossoming. Whereas, you know, Will Smith is in a questionable situation right now. And I think it's as shocking as it was, as controversial as it was, I think it really, really exemplified Chris Rock's professionalism. And, It's paying off for them in the long term. I think it'll do well for people to remember that, because I think we're about to enter into a very interesting season in our economy. And I think it behooves people to maintain professionalism at all times. So when you said that, it made me think about that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, who you are in time of adversity mm-hmm. is what your character that you really, really are. I strongly believe that.
Yeah. With so much risk right now going on, thinking of the recession and so forth and how people respond to it, what do you think is the biggest risk with the new workforce? And how do employers overcome the obstacle of mounting pressures to conform to new ideas?
Yeah. You know, one of the big things that was topic of discussion at the SHRM conference this week was, you know, where the workplace is going, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot of employers, especially, you know, maybe, you know, the older generation employers, like this, you know, discussion, because it's becoming more of an employee's market.
Sure.
And then it is an employer market. Mm-hmm. And employers are no longer writing the job offers. The employees are writing the job offers. The applicants are writing the job offers. Mm-hmm. So it's no longer, hey, we really like you. We want you to come work for us. This is your offer. And you either sign here and start Monday, or you don't sign here and you go to the next interview, you know. but applicants now are coming to employers and saying, hey, I see you have this position open. This is what I want. This is how I want to be treated. These are the benefits that I want. If you don't like it, I don't sign and I go to the next job. and that's exactly what it's turning into. And so I think the biggest risk is employers not realizing that they're going to have to conform a little bit. They're going to have to kind of think outside the box. And, you know, and especially the newer generation. And I try to stay away from all the generational lingo, X and Y and millennials and stuff. Right. I mean, we're all people and we're all here and we're all, you know, and we're all human. And that's what I love about human resources, because if, you know, we treat everybody the same. Yeah. But as employers, we've got to realize that if I'm going to create a workforce that is going to take me into the future, that's going to take me into the next generation of success, I'm going to have to change a little bit with the workforce, right? And so we see a lot of things like employers offering different types of benefits that we've never even heard of. We've got, you know, working home from home, telecommuting, pet insurance. These are just things that we are, you know, we've got to be as employers flexible and realizing what we're going to have to. If not, it's going to be a huge risk. And unfortunately, I believe, and I have seen employers that have refused to conform and change, and it's hurt a lot.
Yeah, I think the pain is what's going to make a company change the most part. There was an article I saw just a moment ago from Recode, where they reported on a leaked memo from Amazon saying how they've hired everyone they can hire, and the labor market is so tight that they don't have anyone else to hire anymore. So what are they going to do? You know, and it really was putting a damper on their expansion plans and so forth. And I think it's going to be situations like that where companies have their backs against the wall, that they're going to be the most flexible at that point. We're going to see more crazy benefits like yours, like the one you were mentioning. I think the companies that are going to win out when talent is just that stark are companies that really give interesting perks, like you mentioned. One perk that I don't see that much of, but I think it would be golden handcuffs for a lot of employees. If a company gave benefits of, we'll pay for the care of your aging parents, because we have a lot of aged parents, that probably would resonate a lot. But I think also it's going to be the company's advantage to really invest in their employer branding.
Absolutely.
They got to really show that they are the best place to work, because it's not always about money. You know, I saw this.
Exactly. Yeah. I was just about to say that it's becoming less about the compensation and more about the human aspect of the employee. You know, what are you going to do for me? Are you going to care about me? Are you going to care about my family and my personal well-being? And if I'm happy with that, then, you know, compensation is second. And a lot of people don't believe that, but that is absolutely right.
The PayScale.com did a survey of the most and least loyal employees, and on that list was Google. And Google is known for all the great perks, you know, free food, rock concerts on the square, all this kind of crazy stuff that they do. What do you think is the average tenure of a Google employee? Now, this was pre-pandemic. So this was from, I think this was 2018, I think it was 2017, 2018, somewhere in there. So they were on the list for being among the companies that had the highest median pay of their employees. But can you guess what the average tenure was according to PayScale.com?
Yeah, I'm probably going to say about 3 years.
No, I'm going to tell you it's 13 months.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, 13 months with all of those perks, and they were having an issue with retention. Now, I don't know if how they qualified the 13 months. I don't know if it was, you know, contractors were factored in. I don't know if it's a matter of once you have Google on your resume, everyone else is trying to recruit you away. That could be part of it, too. I don't know. But 13 months with all of those perks.
Wow.
Money is not everything to keep your employees.
That's absolutely correct, you know, because, you know, employees are saying, hey, I would rather take less money and be off every Friday.
Sure.
You know, as far as more flexibility in telecommuting or better benefits, you know, for my family. So, yeah, I definitely see that.
I see a real tug of war going on, too. Let me get your input on this. I see a real tug of war as well from companies who want to bring their employees back to the workforce. I'm thinking of Tesla, Elon Musk saying, you know, come to the office or you're fired. And I see that a lot of workers are spoiled, for lack of a better word, and they used to work from home. They don't want to go back to the office. And I could see companies saying, hey, we spent all this money on office space. Somebody needs to be here because we paid this lease for the next year or so. You know, how do you think this is ultimately going to end? Work from home or go to the office or something in between? What do you think?
Yeah, I definitely think it's going to be a mix of both. I think we're going to have, obviously, in a lot of professions, you've got to have people in the office for certain things.
Sure.
But I think a lot of administrative jobs are probably going to be moved toward telecommuting and, working from home more. So I definitely think it's going to be a mix of both. I don't think the office, you know, the 9-to-5 grind is going to go away just yet. Now, as technology increases and gets better and we're able to do more remotely, we've already seen just in the last 2 years. I mean, before 2020, who heard of Zoom? I had never heard. I mean, colleges and schools and universities were using it. But, you know, your average everyday Joe had never heard of Zoom before. So just in the last 2 years, we have taken technology and we've increased leaps and bounds now. And we're doing things as part of the workforce that we've never done. I mean, I never thought I would be doing interviews over video conference. Mm-hmm. So I definitely think that that's going to continue to increase and it's going to continue to progress. And as it does, I think we're going to see more of a shift. But I don't think the office is quite done yet. But I definitely think we're going to see a big shift in certain types of positions moving toward remote work.
How do you think the trend of the Great Resignation, potential recession, crazy gas prices? How does all of that factor in, you think?
You know, that's all going to come back to that human aspect and culture that you're building around your employment. You know, it's definitely, you know, recession and all of that is lingering in the back of everybody's mind. Gas prices, sure, of course, is affecting everybody's pocket. And, you know, the Great Resignation is this term that, you know, obviously has blown up and has been on every magazine cover in the last 6 months. But, you know, I think as employers, it goes back to that. We're just going to have to adjust and we're going to have to make every decision that employers are going to be making is going to have to take the employee in mind. And, you know, it is making this decision for my company, how is it going to affect, you know, the employee? Mm-hmm. That's not a question, unfortunately, that had always been asked. You know, employers were very performance-based, you know, very, you know, where's the ROI? You know, get, you know, show me what we're doing to move forward, and less about how are the decisions that I'm making affecting the employee and you know, helping them to you know, stick around and help us get there. So I believe that's, you know, unfortunately, that's something that is on everybody's mind. And I think it's going to come down to, you know, those that are around the table saying, okay, let's look at every decision we're making and how it's affecting, you know, those people that keep the wheel greased around here.
You said something very interesting there. You said the word table. Thinking about how if you were to ask a CEO or anyone in C-suite what's the most valuable resource, they always say, oh, our people are our most valuable resource. You know, without our people, we're nothing. Yet HR, and more often in HR in more cases than not, does not have a seat at the proverbial table. They're not there when a lot of decisions are made. They're just sort of decisions just sort of roll down on top of them and they have to deal with it. Why do you think HR overall, I mean, it may not be the case in every company, but certainly in a lot of companies, HR doesn't have a seat at the table. Why do you think that is?
Well, I mean, that's a great question. And it's a question that I promise you every person in human resources ask. because unfortunately now, not in, in my current position, I'm privileged to have a seat at the table, and I think we are making strides to include human resources in those, you know, in those executive decisions. But not every company is privileged to be in that situation. And it goes back to, you know, that old mindset, that old train of thought of, you know, those that are around the table are more focused about where the company is going, right? Where profitability, return on investment, big picture. And so it's easier to sit there and say, oh, the employees are our most valuable asset, Jim. But really, are they? And show me how they are the most valuable asset. And, you know, I did a training not too long ago, and I did some research in this, and I found out that, and this is a staggering statistic, 88% of C-suite executives cannot explain their company culture.
Wow.
And so,
wow,
that's staggering. You walk up to the CFO and you say, tell me what it's like to work here. Right? Give me that 30-second elevator pitch. And 88% of C-suite executives said, I don't know. I can't tell you what our culture is. And so that's something that human resources is going to have to be the trusted advisor. Mm-hmm. And if you want a seat at the table and you're trying to get a seat at the table, one of the I get asked a lot, hey, do you have any great resources for HR managers? And, what's something that will help us get a seat at the table? And I say, hey, you know, David Maister wrote a book called The Trusted Advisor. And I mean, this is an excellent, excellent resource. In his book, he says it's not enough for professionals to be right, but advisors have to be helpful.
Okay.
And, he also said it's amazing what you can achieve when you're not worried about who gets the credit. And so I've always told, you know, human resources or just leaders, individual, hey, if you want a seat at the table, if this is something that you're trying to get to, be helpful, be selfless. Because once you can achieve those two things, when you can be selfless and you can be helpful, that's when somebody starts pulling out the seat for you, because they know that you're not there for you. They know you're there for the bigger picture. Once you've got a seat at the table, it's kind of like, you know, going fishing. Once you set the hook and you've got the seat at the table, then you build on that. And that's where you start pulling in the human aspect to your team and to your company culture.
Well, let me let's put you in the proverbial hot seat for a second here. Okay, so you're the HR manager, you have the CEO's ear. The CEO says to you over lunch or in a meeting, "Hey, we just had some layoffs, regretfully, and I see the recession numbers on the horizon. It's all I hear about in the news, so it's on my forefront of my mind. I know a lot of my employees are probably nervous right now. I want to calm them down." Not engaged, they're not working, we're losing money. Mm-hmm. Tell me some ways I can preserve my culture or create a positive culture in the midst of all of this uncertainty. And with the underlying reason being that I don't want to lose a lot of my workforce because it's going to cost me money to replace these people. Mm-hmm. You know, it's cheaper to keep her, as the song goes. So how can I keep everybody reasonably happy and keep my workforce in the middle of all this uncertainty? What's the magic widget? What could I do?
Two words: transparency and engagement. We've got so many companies that I don't want to say have secrets, but we've got so many because I mean, obviously you can't just go around and sharing every detail with everyone, but transparency about why the company is in the situation that it's in or why it's making decisions that it's making and sharing that with everyone. Because once an employee knows why you're making the decision, then that takes off the stress of them asking who's next or what's next. And so transparency, you know, and engagement. Engagement, bring the employees in and say, hey, what are some ideas? You give us some ideas. How can we keep you engaged? A lot of times, and this is a fault of a lot of HR managers, Jim, is, you know, we try to think for the employees. That never ends well. I mean, it's like shooting an arrow in the dark because you think you know what the employees want. You think you know what the culture is, and you think you know how to keep everybody engaged when really you're just guessing. And it's, and you know, somebody, there's a, I read something not too long ago that said, if you're the one making all the decisions for everyone, then you're never going to have a decision that's better than your own. And so, you know, we've got to keep the employees engaged, and that's not, you know, that's not sending out employee engagement forms, and that's not doing surveys. And you say, you know, okay, 1 through 5, how do you feel the employee cares about? No, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about sitting down with the employees one-on-one and saying, give me some ideas. I'm giving you an opportunity to share with me what you're thinking. Right? How do I help you? What are some ways do you think we can move forward? What are some ways that we can improve retention? And I promise you, once you start getting engaged with the employees, you're going to come out with tons of data to help you move forward.
I like that. It reminds me of something I read. I don't remember the company, but they had a really high retention rate. It was a smaller company, smaller being under 500 employees, but this is something that the CEO and the managers all do in the company, and they had like a really strong retention rate because of it. They would have, they would schedule 2 meetings, or at least 1 meeting, and they would have one-on-ones, and they would say, okay, in this meeting, I'm going to listen to what you have to say. If you want to complain, if you want to give praise, if you want to cry, whatever the case may be, I am your, you know, de facto therapist today. Tell me what you want to tell me about the company. Hopefully it's something good, right?
Yeah.
And so they sit there and they listen for like 10 minutes, you know, assuming that the employee has something to say. And then when they finish, the employee finishes saying, he says, okay, thank you for that. I'm not going to respond to what you said. I'm going to take notes on what you said. I'm going to go back to the back cave and think about it. And then I'm going to come back later in a more open setting and say, hey, I've listened one-on-one to all of you people and all of your comments, taken into advisement. This is what we're going to do. Even if that manager or CEO, whoever, says something that nobody likes, they're able to accept it more because they know that they listened.
Yes.
You know, even if they don't agree with the decision and even they're mad about it, it only goes so far because they say, well, at least the guy listened to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at least I was able to vent to him.
Right.
That one little thing, listening, I don't have a metric for it, but I know this company I'm thinking of, they had a very strong retention rate because of doing stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't cost a lot of money. You know, it takes a little bit of patience.
Exactly. And you said something very important there too, Jim. I want to
please
bounce off of. You said, you know, managers have that. They do that, and they say, this is what we're going to do. I just want to bounce off that and say, if you're a leader or an executive or whatever you are, supervisor, if you say you're going to do something, follow through. That is very, very important. Always follow through. That's, you know, follow through is another one of the key components in the core values that I you know, teach new and upcoming managers. If you know, do what you say and say what you do. And, you know, if you have to say, hey, this is what we're going to do, and you have to give yourself a time frame to hold yourself accountable, then do that. But the worst thing that you can do to lose credibility with your team is to say, hey, this is what we're going to do, and then never do it. Because then you will stop getting the feedback that you've begged for the last 9 months, telling mm-hmm. people, hey, we want your feedback. We want better communication. We want this. We want this. We care for you. And then you get all of that feedback, right? You've convinced the employees. You finally convinced the employees to sit down with you and give you all of this data and give you all of this information. You say, this is amazing data. This is great data. This is what we're going to do. And then you don't do it. The next time you sit down with your employees, they're not going to tell you anything. And so, because it's a waste of time. And so do what you say, say what you're going to do, hold yourself accountable, and always follow through.
Very, very good advice. I've definitely enjoyed this conversation. if someone wanted more information about you and how they can contact you for more about what we've been talking about here, how can they find you online?
Yeah, love talking about leadership and leadership development, Jim. And if anybody wants to reach out to me, they can visit my LinkedIn page. It's LinkedIn, and my username is J. Chris Riley, and my email address is John Riley, JohnRiley at Outlook.com.
Very cool. Well, John, thank you so much for being on Tripod. You are appreciated.
Thank you so much, Jim, for having me.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. 1,000 times thank you for listening and subscribing to our podcast. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, please send them to us. You can reach us at Tripod, that's TRIBEPOD, at proactivetalent.com. We look forward to hearing from you.